The Office of Federal Procurement Policy will update a nearly five-year-old policy in a renewed effort to stop contract duplication. In 2011, OFPP required agencies to submit a business case for all multiple award contracts worth more than $50 million for other agencies to comment on. In his weekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, executive editor Jason Miller writes about this policy change and how, in many ways, it's already happening, and he joins me now. Jason, this is something they've been chasing after for a long time.
It feels that way. I mean, the 2011 policy that was put together by then-OFPP Administrator Dan Gordon was really all about trying to get their arms around contract duplication and the fact that it just grew out of control. In fact, Tom, Federal News Radio, I did a special report back in 2010 called Contract Overload, and we have that linked up on federalnewsradio.com for people to look at. But in that special report and the memos that came from it and the efforts that have been going on for the last 5 years really looked at the fact that it seems like every agency wants to do their own contract, their own blanket purchase agreement, their own multiple award contract, and instead of using the existing ones, and many times the overlap is great and it costs more money because contractors bid on it and agencies have to spend money running it. And I think over the time, what has gone on is they put together this business case requirement, and while people have definitely set forth their business cases, I'm not sure the other agencies are reading it or commenting on it, because there's this unwritten rule, or maybe there's this kind of wink, wink, nod, nod that says, if you don't stop mine, I won't stop yours. And I think that's the problem that's been going on for the last few years.
I guess if they run it right, these contracts can be moneymakers for agencies.
I think that's part of the issue, but less of it, because remember, if you're doing a government-wide acquisition contract, that's a GWAC, and then you also have multiple award contracts, that's a MAC. So here go. Here it is, Tom. A MAC is a GWAC, but not all GWACs are MACs.
Sounds like a McDonald's menu or something up top on Sundays.
But the point is this, I think. Agencies that run multiple award contracts that are open to all of government, let's say GSA or NIH or NASA, they do make money off of it. They can't make a profit, obviously, but they do. It is a revenue source. An agency such as DHS that runs the Eagle contract as a good example of a multiple award contract, they do not make money off of it, but what they're trying to do is get volume discounts, have a set of contractors that they trust, that supposedly understand what DHS's needs are. So you have these two, this push and this pull that's happening is, well, do you need Eagle? Could you use a different contract? And we're just picking on Eagle. Justice has them, Treasury has them, almost every agency has these multiple award contracts that they are using.
And I guess maybe the instinct for creating them goes back to the days when computing was much more specialized, like NASA really needed scientific and engineering workstations. Well, there's no such thing anymore. There's either a high-end PC or a low-end PC. And so the instinct remains to create specialized vehicles, but the need really has been gone for years.
And I think that's why we're starting to see a change already happening even before this policy update that OFPP is pushing forward. If you think about category management, and we've seen several memos that came from OFPP over the last few weeks, months, and including a new one that we reported on last week. So let's start with the laptop, desktop policy that OFP put out, which requires agencies to only buy from one of three contracts, NASA, NIH, or GSA. That's an example of this getting their arms around this contract duplication, right? Because it's no longer how hard is it to buy a laptop or a desktop. We're seeing the draft mobile policy that we first reported on last week that is a very similar way. You can buy mobile devices, mobile services from one single contract that has 8 or 10 or 6, however many, awardees, contractors. But again, that's already trying to consolidate those contracts. So we're starting to see this happening. What's going to be interesting, though, is whether or not this OFPP policy, as they update it, how hard does that come down on? I think the biggest problem is, for instance, IT services. It's hard to really push people toward one type of IT services contract. But as you said, really, isn't IT services getting to the point where it's a commodity, whether it's help desk or whether it's systems administrator or going to the cloud? It's not specialized like it once was.
All right. So with this policy then, or really, I guess, pushing a new push for an old policy, I guess, is what you could call it. What will that do to existing contracts? Can they just play out in their lifetimes?
Many times, that's what OFPP is telling agencies to do. When you come up for a renewal or when you come up for an option year, you really need to justify why you need to go forward with that option year. So they're not going to cut anyone off. They're not going to end a contract right away. But I think what they're trying to do over time, and like the mobile IT services draft policy that we got a hold of last week is a good example, where they're saying by this date, in this case, I think it was something like August 2018, you need to stop using these older contracts. You need to only use the federal strategic sourcing one for wireless services and devices.
I guess the implication, too, for contractors is with fewer GWACs to have to service and bid on, maybe their costs go down, and that helps the whole category management issue.
I think you're absolutely right. And it also gives agencies... they're going to save money too, because remember, it costs money to run your own contract. When you do have to do contract administration for a contract that has 8 or 10 or 12 contractors, that's not cheap. And a lot of agencies forget that that is an expense that they are bearing.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, and discussing what's in his Inside the Reporter's notebook this week. And you also talk about the acquisition gateway, which is related to a lot of this. This is something that people have been waiting for. GSA has been talking about for a long time. Something, I guess, ordered up by OMB at some distant point in the past. What's the latest in the plans that you know of?
Well, what's interesting about the acquisition gateway, and this has been in the works for the better part of a year now, but they're going to open it up to the public, whether this week or next week, but very soon. And by opening it up to the public, now you're not going to be able to see everything, but you or I or contractors or people in think tanks or Congress can understand what types of information are being posted, whether it's sample statements of work or other types of information. And the whole goal is to increase transparency, which is always the goal that we hear, but also more like what best practices
are out
there.
You can see through that goal.
You can see that through. What other things are out there that maybe could be added that maybe GSA just doesn't know about or other agencies don't know about? So they're trying to bring in really some of the best practices into the gateway and have, you know, more minds, almost like the idea of crowdsourcing. I think it's good that they're opening it up. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is, because there is a lot of concern by vendors that, yes, GSA and OFPP are saying this is a vendor-neutral, a agency-neutral gateway, where it's just a big database where all the information lives that you can go find and do your research and understand what's going on. But what if something's wrong? Or what if something, you know, you read one thing, I read another, and we interpret it differently, and then there is a big stink that happens based on just different interpretations? They are opening themselves up to a lot of challenges that way. But overall, I think it's smart that they're doing it, because I think there is a big clamoring, especially from media and from industry, to what is inside the gateway.
And do we know from a technical standpoint, will it work when they turn it on? Will it work better than, say, SAM?
Your guess is as good as mine. I think they're in better shape. I mean, they definitely are using a more modern infrastructure to host the gateway. They've had they've been working on this for some time. They already have 5,000 users from the government. Their goal is 10,000 users from the government by the end of the year. So I think that they understand that they're going to have a lot of people who are going to be hitting that gateway. So I would hope that they're ready.
All right. So briefly on a couple of other things of interest in your column, NSA, National Security Agency, and its workforce retention efforts. That's a bright spot in this whole retention area.
NSA is a very special organization for many reasons. A lot of people don't like them. A lot of people criticize them, but a lot of people really celebrate how the work they do. Mike Rogers, the admiral who runs NSA, talked recently at an event and mentioned that in 2015, their retention rate was 96.7%. So almost 97% of all employees stayed on for in 2015 to 2016. And that's incredible, especially if you think about the type of work NSA does. Highly technical, highly sought after, you know, cybersecurity and the like, but they're able to keep their people. And that got me thinking, why are they able to do that? Why them versus anybody else? And remember, there are plenty of civilian workers who work at NSA. So it's not just they have people in the military service who then can't get out.
Right.
But I talked to Tony Sager, who spent 35 years at NSA, is now with the Center for Internet Security. And long story short is, he says, what NSA does better than anybody else, private sector or public sector, is invest in its people. They have training, and it's long-term training. It's in-house lectures. It's in-house universities. It's not just, hey, Tom, welcome. Here's your book. Good luck. They keep you going. And especially around cybersecurity, this was something that Tony said I thought was very interesting. A lot of companies, a lot of agencies are trying to hire that mid-career experienced person. NSA is happy with the younger folks, who then they'll train them by working with the older folks, people who have been in NSA for a long time. And that's actually how they keep on the cutting edge, on the leading edge. So I thought it was just a worthwhile lesson that agencies can take. It seems like we go back to this training.
Good application of the basics. And finally, Jason, there's a piece of sad news for the federal acquisition community.
Yes, somebody in the federal community passed away, Scott Orbach, who co-founded EasyGSA, which is a government contractor that did several things, helped other contractors get on the GSA schedule, helped them on bids and other kind of capture management. He passed away suddenly while on vacation in Hawaii. It's obviously very sad whenever we lose someone in this federal community, and someone tragically passing away is always heartfelt. So our obviously good wishes go out to his family.
All right, indeed they do. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.